I would never, never rip. Now that's what I call a Merry Christmas. I would
Oh, you don't have to. Nora's already done it, and he'll provide you his entire collection.
Yeah, totally. It's been about a month, but it's time for a little follow-up. I put a plug out there. I said, hey, if anybody has got a 3DS that they want to offload, I'm not really in a position to buy one, but I'd love to trade, or if you want to sell it to me for like a used price, something like that. And I actually got a bite. Alex, he tweeted me and hit me up in the Discord and said, I've got a barely used 3DS XL with the case and the charger. I don't have any games. Maybe just send me some swag, and I'll send you this 3DS with the case.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, absolutely, a 3DS XL. I'd never get myself that. I'll totally get that. So we did a little exchange, sent him a bunch of swag, and it turned out he was international, which I didn't think about at the time, but actually proposes quite the challenge. So it arrives, and I see like the custom sticker or whatever that's on there, and I pull it out of the box, and I notice that the charger is not a US.
Euro plug.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, no big deal. I've got one for my 2DS, and it's the same plug. So yeah. I was able to use that, no problem. But when I began the setup process, because he had wiped it for me, it gave me all of the regions in the world to choose from, except the United States.
Mm. It's region locked.
And what I discovered is that they have certain hardware that's region locked to certain areas. Like, you can't just change the region ever. And so none of the games that we have play on
it. They just won't play at all?
No.
You know what's funny, Chris? That the 3DS is the last console they did that with.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
It looks like it used to be easier to un-region lock it, and then they did an update a little while ago that makes it a lot harder.
Ugh.
So now I'm putting the word out there to the audience. I'm like, what can I do? Because I know people, there's other like sort of like hack ROMs you can put on the, I don't know really.
You might ask if anybody would be willing to trade a UK 3DS for a US 3DS, because some people want foreign 3DSs.
That's a lot of hassle. I would just like to be able to reflash it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen on a Nintendo product.
No?
Nope.
Oh, man, this is, like, not a great...
And if it does, you'll never be able to update again.
It's kind of it's a beautiful device. It really is well-built. And he had some online games, so it's funny because they're not tied to your user account. The online games in the 3DS XL, they're tied to the device.
Oh.
So even though he wiped it and none of his personal information is on there...
I have
re-downloaded all the games he ever bought from that device.
You can't buy any of yours.
I can't, no. I don't know why you never bought Mario or Metroid. Come on, Alex. But so that was fun, so I can use it,
yeah.
But not any games that I ever plan to play on it. Which is so it's kind of a tease a little bit. And I'm like, there has to be a way to fix this. Like, I don't want to be resigned to just it can only play these games.
Can you buy international games? International versions?
I don't know. I don't know because
you can just go on to Amazon.co.uk and they'll still ship to the US.
That's interesting. So just then I have to like re, and they're kind of like $50, $60.
Oh, do you already
games.
Have a library of?
Well, I have a handful that I bought for Dylan, and so I. Was just,
I see. Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And then but the other thing is, I also have. I was mistakenly thinking that I could just log in to my eShop Nintendo eShop account and re-download my purchases, like a civilized human being, because I bought Metroid on the 2DS in their online store. So I thought I would just log in and then re-download Metroid on my new device. And I was even prepared to, like, sign out from the 2DS or wipe it, because they do have a system transfer.
Sure.
But you can't system transfer from region-locked devices. But I was prepared to, like, no longer have the game on my 2DS, but no, it can't happen.
No.
Not happening. So I didn't see this one coming, because I'm just not a big... I haven't been a big Nintendo person since the Super Nintendo. So I just didn't know what to expect. I didn't know they operated like this.
I believe all of the systems used to be region locked across all the console makers, but the PS3 was the last one, the Xbox 360, and the 3DS and the Wii U. So the Switch is not region locked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, if I was going to spend money today, I think I would get a Switch.
Yeah, I think I would as well.
If my kids were a little older, I could have maybe convinced myself to spend that money for their Christmas present, but I don't think they're quite old enough yet to fully appreciate a gaming console. So I'm going to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah, that's
wait
fair.
For a bundle or something. In the meantime, if anybody has tips on how to reflash the 3DS or break the region lock, or if, you know, like I know my buddy John, he has like a flash cartridge or an SD card, it's probably, I think. He puts it in his 3DS and it just has ROMs of all his games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I could just do something like that.
That would be nice.
I don't. If I could find backup copies of all of the cartridge games that I've legally purchased and load them onto a loader and play them that way, that's good enough for me. That does it. So if anybody has any tips, let me know at ChrisLAS, or you could go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/telegram and join the Telegram group there, or you know, some other fancy way that you figure out. But let me know. What can I do?
Well, on Linux Unplugged this week, we were doing some talking about Patreon and their ilk. There's been another big development, though. They posted a sort of apology, and they're walking back these recent fee changes. What do you think of that?
I am really trying to process this in a way that doesn't sort of give me this sinking feeling about crowdfunding. Because it's one of these things where I've now been through it a couple of times where, like, Patreon got hacked once.
Yep.
Or when I got a divorce, or now this, or when we canceled Linux Action Show, where it's you're building momentum towards something. You got big plans. Maybe you're going to let a sponsor go, try to do less sponsorships, and then, boom, some big upset happens. And there's an instant internet mob that's formed that demands answers from me and begins canceling their patrons. You know, and I understand why, because they were getting screwed by Patreon. So I'm not angry at the audience. I'm angry at Patreon. We lost across Unfilter and Jupiter Signal. We lost about 50 patrons. And when you cancel, I guess there's an exit form. I've never canceled a Patreon, so I've never seen that. But
right, yeah.
There's an exit form in there. And people were very upset about the change. A couple of them, handful of them, mistakenly thought it was a change we had made.
Mm, right.
And so people called us money grubbers and were particularly upset at us. I got tweets and Discord messages about people that were angry and they were canceling their Patreon and they wanted me to set up an alternative payment system.
It was
another option.
Yeah.
And everybody had their choice. A lot of people wanted LibrePay. Some people wanted PayPal. Some people wanted Bitcoin. And it just sort of – and none of these, of course, plug into like an incentive system or a tiered system where you can have different levels. Right.
You'd have to manage them entirely.
Which is – I'm not opposed to it, but it all had to be built. Like I can't just create it out of nowhere. And a lot of times people would recommend me go to LibrePay, but LibrePay actually just had the same fee structure that everybody was upset about from Patreon. So it didn't really feel like that was getting away from the core issue. And it leaves me feeling shaken that crowdfunding isn't a sustainable primary model, because the internet now is in a place where we go from 0 to 11 within seconds, and everything becomes a really big deal. People demand answers. People want immediate action. People
right.
want you to start instantly virtue signaling how you feel about this. And if you don't participate in the outrage, then you're against them. And it happens like that. And if you think about it, people were right to be upset, because what this basically did is charged you 35 cents per supporter or per person that you backed on Patreon. So you're getting punished. So you go in there and you want to just spread it around. So you just love all the Linux podcasters. And so you wanted to go around and give each of them a buck. Well, now you're paying $1.35, and you really only had like $5 to give out in the first place, and now you're giving out like almost $10 after all is said and done. Not what you signed up for. And I understand the upset there. What I, you know, the thing is, at the same time, I wish it was tempered with this is the livelihood of these companies. Or like take Ikey for Solus. He's just recently gone fully independent from Patreon funding.
That's a huge move.
And then he gets hit and he loses like 30 patrons. I mean, that's a stressful thing, and then you're supposed to keep working, and it's this really hard thing to process, because it feels like there's not a lot of thought given about the other end of this. Like the
right.
creators really got punished in this process, because the platform made a change that they weren't told about. There was no like I found out at the same time everybody else.
Yeah, they didn't
found
consult
out.
You.
Right. There was no like heads up or no option for me to toggle it off. And the audience found out in a way that didn't come from me. It came from Patreon, but they didn't quite – it wasn't obviously clear to a lot of them. And it created this outrage. And I would have just – if I could have asked anything from people that canceled their Patreon, is I would have just asked – just wait a week until they would have done the payment processing, because it didn't take effect until the next payment processing.
Right.
So we had a month to sort of figure this thing out. But instead, we lost 50 patrons over this thing, and Unfilter has slid back from a milestone it was approaching that I was hoping we would get to in early 2018. It's a bummer. And it messes
with your plans, and
it seems like it could happen on LibrePay. They could have payment processing issues where they have to raise their fees. They could have a denial of service attack. I mean, I couldn't even get their webpage to load for days.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a Patreon problem. I think it is a court of public opinion in an environment that demands immediate action with very low tolerance for people screwing up anymore. And it makes this volatile situation that I think might make crowdfunding risky as a primary source for software development, for media creation. And I really think it's going to drive creators to focus deeper on sponsorships and brand deals as a result of these kinds of things. Because it's not a punishment. It's not like, oh, I'm punishing you for canceling. It's, holy fuck, like people can just get really pissed off about a change that gets rolled back a few days later and I can be out $100. Like, that's the warning shot. Well, what if I had said something really controversial one time? Or the fact that one time we lost like something like 70 patrons because I got a divorce. And they don't even know the story there. They have no context. They have no idea what happened. But they decided, I can't support somebody that gets a divorce. And that's their choice. That is their choice.
Absolutely.
But that means as a business, you have to evaluate that risk. Where a sponsor, you can get them in a contract. You can sue them for damages if they improperly cancel a contract.
Right.
Nobody wants to get in that position, but there is avenues that are predictable for a business to depend on there.
And you can actually talk to their representative, too, about some things, where that's a lot harder. You can obviously have feedback, but how do you get a good read on the whole community? Obviously,
right.
People who are offended speak up more than, I'm a patron of JB, and I don't ever send you a message about it, ever.
And, you know, we got a few more people sign up to just show solidarity, and a few people up their pledges, too. So this is not a rant about our particular situation,
right.
More as it is
right.
Like, hey, this could be a problem that a lot of people start thinking about if these sort of justice mobs form all of a sudden and people start losing their funding. Because at the end of the day, people got employees, they got businesses to do, they got expenses. Like, you got to lock this stuff down or you go out of business. And I don't like where this is going, because I think people that are patrons, they might like the idea of having less sponsors.
Yeah.
Of it being more independently funded.
And it feels like it's something that I want. You know, I see the benefits of that in things that I sponsor, and I would like that to be viable for the people doing the hard work.
And I wonder, and I know I said this in LUP already, but I wonder if it's not possible until we get rid of these middleman layers. Because Patreon isn't the only middleman here. They then talk to a bank who is talking to the Visa network. Like, there's several middlemen. There's several data centers involved with this process.
Right.
And it feels like the only way around it is either people write you a check or hand you cash, or you do sponsorship deals, or cryptocurrency takes off in a way where there's no middleman. And unless one of those three things is really – it just doesn't feel like there's – everything else seems too risky almost now.
Yeah, I think the – on the Patreon side of things, I think Patreon probably needs to do like more public discussion and messaging with both the creators and the people funding the creators.
Yeah, this is definitely
– because – I actually think that the change they made is a good change implemented.
I think a lot of people disagreed.
Slightly off, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think the concept behind the thing was to stabilize the amount of income a creator can expect, because up till now, the creator gets a varying amount each month based on their processing fees.
Yeah. And also, I'll just point out, too, it gives a false sense of revenue, too, when you go to our Patreon page and you see a number there and you're like, oh, that's how much money they're making. No, it's 25% less than that.
Yeah. And then because a lot of people treated this like Patreon was trying to get more money out of people, but the money that they're taking out is just the processing fees that they have to pay to someone else. I think what they should have done probably is to take, like, if you are pledging below a certain amount, you just aggregate those small pledges and take them out once at the end of the month with one transaction fee.
Yeah.
And that would solve that problem.
That seems obvious.
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't just, like, instead of – I think they decided to walk it back to and try to re-implement it later. And I think that's probably
how they're going to do
it.
That was the impression I got. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people were speculating that Patreon is trying to thin the herd of the smaller donors because it costs them money. And they don't tend to have a lot of social influence or something. I can't remember what this guy's write-up was. But essentially their theory was that Patreon was trying to go towards the $10,000 a month creators, the ones that are pulling in $10,000, who aspire other creators to come to the platform and who have a social reach that gets a lot of supporters to come in that are doing more than a buck.
I don't know. That seems kind of conspiracy theory to me.
It is. It's totally bacon. But I guess they just recently got a bunch of money They just raised funds from a VC, and they had a person come in and sort of like do an evaluation and tell them how to clean up operation.
Is that right?
Okay. And he did a big blog post where he kind of recommended focus on the $10,000 a month creators and stuff like that. I don't know if that's their actual plan, but that's what fueled some of the outrage.
I mean, yeah, it does make sense to focus on those people a bit because, you know, they're bringing in a lot of money. But I feel like Patreon, like, it's successful because of the aggregate of people. I don't think they want to piss them off.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't really understand how LibrePay solves this problem. How does the source code of the platform being open matter? I like that they're a nonprofit. I believe they're a nonprofit. That seems to be the best aspect to it.
Right.
But I don't really understand how LibrePay wouldn't be just slacked with the same problems if they got a high amount of success.
Right. Like it's yeah, useful because... for it to be open source, but at the same time, like to use that, you would then go have to replicate the whole LibrePay infrastructure, and that the software is probably not the hard part.
And I agree. I like the idea that they are like more of a foundation and less of a for-profit company like Patreon is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not convinced that for this particular function, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're going to pay the same processing fees.
Exactly.
I mean, they could implement it in like a different way, like the way I suggested. But unless they go to something like Bitcoin, you're still going to have processing fees.
Yeah. Yeah, and even with Bitcoin, you got transaction fees.
True.
Depending on the, yeah, that's why they go to Dash or Monero. I'm kidding. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. There's one thing you can get yourself that nobody else is going to get you for the holidays, and that's a gift for your mind. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. I joke, but yet I am so serious right now because it's a great opportunity for you to push yourself a little bit, advance your career, learn something new, challenge yourself in an area that's maybe not your strong suit. My favorite thing to do. And they have hands-on scenario-based labs that give you real experience, get you ready for tests, or doing it in production. Doing it in production. I said doing it in production. They got self-paced, in-depth video courses for every Linux, cloud, and DevOps topic. I could almost turn this into a rap.
You know?
You hearing this? Okay, hold on. Self-paced, in-depth video courses for every Linux, cloud, and DevOps topic. It's not a rap, but you put a little tune to it, and I'm just saying, they ought to run with that. No?
No.
I'm just saying, they could put a tune, put a little animated Linux Academy penguin, dance into it.
It's more like...
six simultaneous cloud servers dedicated just to you. You see what I'm saying?
This is like that Hot Patch song.
Series of courses and content planned for career tracks.
It's more like that, beat poetry?
Yeah, well, that's kind of it,
yeah. Snap your fingers?
I'm not saying it's rap. Rap, that was just what came to me at first, but then I realized there's no way that's going to happen. They're going to have to run with this, and you've got to go over to Linux Academy. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. You get a free 7-day trial to try out the platform. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. And not with an S, unplugged. When you go there, you can also grab out like some lesson audio if you want to just listen to something while you go. Screw audiobooks. How about Linux courseware? How about it? LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged.
I'm considering using Linux Academy to get some certifications because I know Linux, but nobody else knows that I know Linux.
That's true. And it's a good way to sort of demonstrate that you have a capability set. And when they have their public profiles, you can send somebody a link to that. It's a great way to go. Yep. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged.
All you digital people living your digital lifestyles.
You should listen up because, I mean, if you're going to be buying plugs and lamps and stuff over time, you might as well get smart ones as you can. So think about it. Think about it, Beardsley. Think about it. Now's
the future.
Time. You are perched to make your acquisitions. Like, you were in the perfect position. See, for me, like, I had to replace a couple of things. I kind of felt like an asshole.
Right, you're splurging.
To automate my house if I only live in two rooms?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. In fact, Wes has been trying that. Wes, I'm really kind of curious to hear how your Home Assistant experimentation went, because I have played a little bit with Home Assistant. I interviewed the lead developer of it.
Right.
It's this like, how would you call it? Like an open source project that sort of bridges all the different standards, and you can run on a Raspberry Pi, and it'll talk to HomeKit devices, it'll talk to Wemos, it'll talk to X32 devices. Like, it can speak all the different various vendor languages.
I like to think of it as an Internet of Things overlay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, and it's yours, it's open source, you can run it locally.
Yeah.
How did it go, though? It's a big promise.
Actually, so far, so I came into possession of just like one smart switch. I have a Z-Wave door or window sensor that I have not actually set up yet. So this is my first real smart thing, much like the Beard I live in about two rooms as well, a small apartment.
You guys, I live in an RV. You're not...
So we're all... Yeah, right. So I had also wondered, like, well, does this make sense? But I've got this really annoying light, the light switch. It's not. It's nowhere next to my bed. I like to read before bed, and then I need to turn it off. So there's, like, all kinds of ways to solve this. But I had this plug. Let's solve some problems with smart devices.
And it's fun, right?
Yeah, it is kind of fun. So once I actually got it joined up, Home Assistant is just a Python project, so it was super simple to get installed. I've done a bunch of Python, so that was really easy. They have a Docker container. I have a server at home anyway. I spun up a new container, got that going, and that was about it. It was actually really easy. I had to add one line of configuration to a YAML file to make it support the Wemo device that I had, and that was it. And then it was automatically running. It's running right now. The Home Assistant Android app has been pretty easy to use. It's really fast. I mean, by the time I've clicked the thing, the changes are made. So I'm actually pretty impressed. So I haven't done anything complex, but I was pleased it also found my Chromecast on the network as well as the DLNA in my TV. So it is the promise of like a dashboard where I can really look at a bunch of things right there. I like it.
What I like about Home Assistant is if you use it in combination with a plugin called Homebridge, you can have total open source management of HomeKit devices,
which are
otherwise locked down to the iOS platform. And the reason why that's a good thing is HomeKit takes care of some of the infrastructure that otherwise these vendors have to create.
Right.
And
usually in a worse way.
Yes, always, including horrible apps.
Yeah, I did not enjoy the Wemo app one bit. I was glad to have
jump
that done.
Jumping Wi-Fi networks. Yes. You don't have to do any of that with HomeKit.
Really?
So what it means, though, the practical aspect of that is that the devices can be slightly cheaper. And they have a bunch of Bluetooth LE ones that their batteries last for a year.
Wow.
So I have water sensors, leak sensors in my water bay. I have three sensors in the RV that monitor temperature, humidity, air quality, pollutants, allergens, and they monitor in the living room, up by the driver's seat, and in my bedroom. And they're all Bluetooth LE, and they all have a battery that lasts about a year, and they all get connected over HomeKit. They're called the Eve devices, and they don't support any other protocol.
Okay, yeah.
But I like them, and they do exactly what I need, and the low maintenance of them is perfect. And so this Home Assistant allows you to have access to the data. They are generating data about the air constantly.
Right.
And it's just being collected by HomeKit otherwise. But you can actually pull it in with HomeBridge and generate graphs and all kinds of really
cool stuff.
See,
that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is really nerdy. And it's all local. It's not connected to any cloud service. It's pretty. It's great. Yes, I really encourage people to check out Home Assistant.
I've been really impressed. It was super easy to get started. You can have like one configuration file and then just run a thing. And if you don't like it, it's installed as a service. It's easy to get rid of.
And then it's the nice thing about it is you can also tie it in. So say you want to use an Echo, or if you have an Apple Watch and you want to use an Apple Watch to control your HomeBridge components, and Home Assistant components. You can do that. So you can go as consumery as you want with it, or you can stay as Python nerdy YAML file configuration.
Right.
And that's what's cool about it, too, because it appeals to the different range of Linux users out there, I think. And so I've been kind of sitting back and watching the Home Assistant market, watching the security. Like, we've experimented. We've done some packet. You never really found anything that was salacious and worth talking about. But I've just sort of sat back and dabbled with it. You know, I think 2017 was the year... I think was this year we got these things? Was it this year?
Yeah, I think early this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 2017 was the year where I feel like my opinion on these things totally flipped from a complete skeptic. These things are commercialized NSA spying devices that are just waiting for a security order.
Yeah.
To, I want to put these everywhere. And I just put one in my bedroom for the first time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so
that's a new world.
It was a journey. So we used to have this great Bose Bluetooth speaker. I think it was called like the Bose SoundLink or something. Just amazing sound, which you got out of this little tiny Bluetooth speaker. And it was so much so that we would take the RV to rest stops when we're on a road trip. And, you know, you're parked between semi-trucks that are kind of all night long. I've put it in the vlogs a couple times. It's so loud you have to shout to talk outside.
Wow.
Because they're very loud engines, very loud diesel engines. And they're running their generators, and sometimes the generators actually come from the engines. And so when we want to sleep, we would use this Bluetooth speaker to generate Starship sounds that would just sort of...
As one does.
Make you feel like you're on the Starship Enterprise, and sort of cancels out all of the sound around us, and you just go to sleep like you're not surrounded by semi-trucks, and you get a great night's sleep in a rest stop for free. And it's one of our favorite road hacks. And so then we've just adopted using that at home too, when we're just regularly just at home, parked. And it's a nice way to fall asleep or just listen to music. And it died on us finally. Finally gave out after about 3 years of a champ. And I decided I would try to replace it. And I thought, well, okay, maybe this is the time to replace it with a smart speaker. Something, you know, you have like the HomePod out there, Apple's big smart speaker, but they never shipped it. Google just has the Google Max now, which is the home assistant and the big speaker. And Sonos has the Sonos One. Everybody's been talking about the Sonos One. It's a Sonos speaker. It's a tube speaker with great sound, with echo functionality built into a great sounding speaker. So a speaker made by speaker people with the echo functionality built into this thing. And I was out doing my annual Christmas shopping last weekend with my dad, and he and I were talking about how we both were looking for a new speaker for our bedrooms. And I was like, yeah, it needs to be something loud with really full sound, because sometimes I'm trying to blast out really loud stuff so I can sleep. And we're looking, I'm like, look at this. You know what? Maybe we should just get the Sonos One. Now, there's the Sonos colon O-N-E.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's the Sonos colon numeral one. You don't want O-N-E. You want numeral one if you want the echo functionality.
So they're different.
They're different. And so my dad and I both together bought one with the echo functionality built in. And I did some Googling first while we were in the store, and I saw that it's missing some skill functionality, but that they had done some updates and had been adding stuff. So I thought, all right, I'll get it. Take it home, set it all up, and it's just like setting up any other Echo, really. And then I quickly discover it doesn't support Bluetooth. So
what?
Yeah. So no Bluetooth connectivity.
Okay.
So I guess Sonos doesn't, you know, you're supposed to use the Sonos app. But the Echo functionality can't do it either. And then what I also discovered is there's tons of skills it doesn't work with, including some smart devices and stuff I use all the time. So I packed it back all up, and it's in the truck right now. I got to take it back.
Oh, you're taking it back?
Yeah.
How good was the sound quality, though?
Pretty good. Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, I skipped right over that. Pretty good. Pretty good. I think I ended up with a better solution, which is where I'm going, but it was pretty good. I was happy enough that if they had Bluetooth support, or if I could have just gotten skills to replace the stuff I was, like, you know, streaming podcasts mm-hmm. or sounds, if I could have gotten skills, but all the skills I kept trying just didn't work on it. And they just – you would execute them, and then nothing would happen.
Oh, so it's not even like they said they wouldn't work. They just silently failed.
And some people said the mics aren't as good because Sonos didn't originally build it to run the Echo stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which could be the problem. And so I was trying to figure out, like, well, okay, what do I do now? Because I now don't have anything, and I'm out, like, $200. And that's, you know, that's about what a really nice speaker costs.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is kind of nice because it's one product.
It's one device.
And I can – and, you know, the reason why I would want an Echo device in my room – is because it allows us to turn the TV on and off, turn our lights on and off, turn our heaters on and off, adjust the temperature, all the things that it's just really nice to just not even have to, like, turn on a screen or get out of bed if you can just do it. And we can do it throughout the entire RV. So I can even do things like I can ask the Echo, hey, what's the temperature in the living room right now? When in the middle of the night, if I wake up and I'm worried that the kids might be cold. It's just really nice.
Really nice.
So I just thought, I'm going to do it. I'm going to just do it because I have to walk out in the living room to do any of those things. So I'm just going to have it. So that was – and then have it all in one speaker. This is the way to do this. And so I ended up doing like a hodgepodge sort of built-it-myself kind of solution. Hadiya's number one requirement was she wants a portable Bluetooth speaker that when she's cleaning the RV or working outside, she can blast her music and just grab it and take it with her. So it can't be too big.
Right. It's got to be pretty portable.
And she really liked the Bose SoundLink that we had before. So I found the Bose SoundLink Resolve, which is their new 360-degree tube speaker. And it has an aux-in jack, and it supports Bluetooth.
Nice.
Because it's the standard Bose SoundLink. And they're selling it with a Dot bundle right now. Amazon is. Yeah. For essentially the same price of – so just the speaker is $199. But you can get it with a Dot – for $199. So you can get the Dot and SoundLink.
Basically for free.
Yeah. So I ended up buying these two things, putting them together, sort of replicating the Sonos One, getting the full functionality of the Echo Dot. And I first tried to do the aux-in cable, just, you know, hook that up to the SoundLink. That way there would be
simple,
no Bluetooth wonkiness.
Yeah.
Always works. Of course, two problems. It's never easy. The SoundLink goes to sleep if you don't have an active Bluetooth connection and you don't have any sound coming over aux. It just go. So then you go to talk to the dot and you get nothing because the speaker is off and it doesn't know that because it's going through an aux in jack. So I had to scrap that and set it up over Bluetooth. Really easy. I go into the app. I set it up. Boom. It's done in 2 seconds. I was like, okay, this is actually relief that it's just done. And it's been on for 48 hours. Always ready to go. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been any delay. Been quite happy about that. But I discovered that the Echoes can only be paired to a single Bluetooth device at a time. So now what I wanted to do was connect my phone to the dot, have the dot connected to the Bose. So I would play sound to the dot. Like I do this to all the dots here in the studio all the time. Mm-hmm. We have dots in the studio. They're connected to larger speakers, so they sound good. And then I connect my phone to the dot so I can play it over the speakers. The dot manages the Bluetooth connection because I can just say, connect to my phone, disconnect my phone. I don't have to go into any apps. I don't have to touch and pair. It's just perfect. So, and the Bose is a little wonkier than that, especially when you have multiple devices connected. Mm-hmm. So I was just going to have the dot manage it all. But the dot disconnects from the Bose as soon as the phone connects. So then you've got no sound. So it's really just been this hokey ass. Wow.
Do you know if that's a limitation of the dot or all the Alexa devices?
I don't know. I haven't looked that part up yet. I was just sort of disappointed. I do very much recommend the SoundLink, the Bose SoundLink Resolve. The second generation dot worked with that really well, and it sounds awesome. So if you want a really good portable Bluetooth speaker and you're willing to spend $200, because I think that's what a good speaker takes. That's a good size. Mm-hmm. It's about the size of a small. It's like a half the size of a coffee mug, like a portable travel mug kind of.
Oh yeah, okay.
Is size the reason you didn't try the Echo Max or whatever it is?
Yeah. Size, because we're trying to fit it in a shelf on the RV. So yeah, the size was a problem. That was the Google Max was something I would have maybe considered, but I find that the The Echo products are just better for the devices that I have than the Google product, Google Home stuff.
So did your dad keep his?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because he doesn't use nearly the same.
Right. It worked for his use case.
He wanted basically something to just tell it to play music.
Right. So now you guys can lay in bed and chat too before bed now that you have this. Right?
I don't know if his supports drop-in either. Mine does, but you can. One of the things I've now discovered is you can set a dot. You can set any of your Echo devices on permanent D&D. Did not realize this. This is huge for me.
Yeah, that's wow.
This is a huge feature for me that I feel like is purpose built for the type of person I have. I never ever going to want an alert or a message ever on my bedroom dot
or the studio dot.
Did it just do it?
No.
Oh yeah, or the studio dot, because we've gotten shipment notifications and stuff in the middle of a show. It's like, okay, well, thanks. So that's cool. The fact that you can do individual D&D, but I did have a major trying to impress the girlfriend fail, because I'm like, now that we got an Echo out in the living room and we got a dot hooked up to a Bose in the bedroom, what about connecting these things and doing multi-room audio? So I'm like, Hadia, we're making breakfast, I'm like, would you like some Christmas music while we make breakfast?
Yeah.
And I'm expecting to have jingle bells ring throughout the RV now, right? Because I thought, look,
you're dreaming big here, yeah.
No dice. First of all, it failed. Not once, not twice, but three times on recognizing the album I was trying to get it to play. It kept playing the wrong thing, so just that was embarrassing as fuck. And then, so you say, a machine, play, now that's what I call a Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Say that was the album, if you wanted.
Sure.
And play, so you say, say a machine, play, now that's what I call a Merry Christmas on Lady Jupiter. Because Lady Jupiter is the group name for all of the Echo devices, which are now two, in the RV. And when you say that, it's then supposed to begin multi-audio streaming on all of the things in that group at the same time, synchronized music, which would be wonderful. What a nice treat. It just plays on one of them. So it's playing to the right group because they start playing on one of them, but not both of them. And there's nothing I can do. There's no troubleshooting. There's no log to view. There's nobody at Amazon I can ask. It's just go fuck yourself. This isn't working this morning. Try again later tonight. Is it my MiFi? Is it a DNS issue? I don't know. Doesn't matter. You don't get to have it now. And there's just nothing to be had about it. And it brings me back to I can't, I can't get too carried away. This is at some point going to be a piece of shit. It's going to fail.
You just hear Noah in the back of your head screaming, local media. Yeah.
So Beardsley, I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed. I had the privilege of checking out your new abode today when I picked you up as we headed north to the studio.
Oh, you saw the new beard den.
I sure did.
Really?
And especially knowing like how quickly you've tied all of this together, all the changes that have been happening in your life. You've got a pretty sweet new spot. Yeah, congrats.
Well, also, congratulations on your first day of commuting to work.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Wes commuted me to work, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I've got my building has an elevator. Did not expect that.
Ooh, that's nice.
We have covered parking, the only building in the area that has that.
Wow.
That's also nice.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it is.
Things that are not so nice, I've spent $11,000 to do this.
Oh my, hold on, you know, geez, hold on. Do we have a, I think we have a special sound just for that.
Show me the money!
Yeah, so I had to move somebody across the country, as well as two pets, and then find a place, and all the deposits, and first month's last month's, which is actually very confusing, and I don't know if I've actually paid last month's rent yet. Yeah, it's a very frustrating process. Oh, plus commuting back and forth to Arlington over and over and over and over to move all my stuff.
Yeah.
In
That
Seattle.
All sounds about it, doesn't
it? Seattle really traffic does. With somebody that has driving anxiety.
Yeah. So, Beard moved out this week from the studio. We had a spot here carved out just for him. He did manage, you're right, Wes, to really kind of get it all pulled off at a pretty quick clip from nobody being out here to girlfriend moves out, getting out and getting the place. Now really though, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but now it really feels like this is where the hard part begins, which all that other stuff was insane that it was even possible to pull it off in the first place. Yeah. And now it's the hard part.
To be clear, I moved in the span of basically 3 months, more like a month and a half, but about 3 months.
But don't you think that sucks in a way?
It really does, yeah.
It's like you finally get there and it's like, oh, now I have all this other shit to do and get. And there's stuff you're going to be thinking of stuff for weeks that you still have to get.
Yes.
Yeah, well, actually, we've already been doing a lot of that. I went to IKEA yesterday.
Nice.
I thought it was going to be an hour-long trip. It was 5 hours.
Got your steps in, though.
Ooh, that's a lot of IKEA.
It costed $700. I thought it was going to cost $300.
Oh, yeah. This is all checking the boxes so far. It's about how it goes, isn't
somehow
it?
We still don't have a shower curtain.
Yep. Yeah.
But we got computer desks and chairs.
That's okay. Is essential stuff there.
I mean, now you can get your work done. That's important.
Amazon's delivering a nice queen-size foam bed tomorrow.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah, you got to have good sleep, too.
Ooh, good call. Good call.
But you're right. There's like all these things that you just like now you have to fill
chairs,
the home with, figure
plates,
out.
Silverware, food. You got to put something in the cupboards.
Plus,
and in the
like making a new kitchen, like that's not always non-trivial. You want to find the right drawers for the right things.
You got to get all the stuff, all the goes in the kitchen.
Right, somehow, yeah, also that.
I somehow lucked into a very nice kitchen. Actually, it's got a nice.
Yeah, I saw a picture of it. It does look really nice. Mm-hmm. Good bar for
nice countertop.
You could do like some shooting there. You know.
Yep.
It could be.
I like that. That was you're the first thing you said to me when I sent that picture. You're like, that'd be great for recording.
Of course.
I was thinking more like breakfast platter.
Yeah, that too would be good. I mean, I'm all about a breakfast platter.
Yeah. For the crew doing the shooting, you know.
So are you basically like every day trying to just get as much in as you can? Like, because it's like, boy, so
I think
IKEA trips alone can be multi-hour investments. Yep. It's exhausting. I'm just getting tired thinking about it.
We opted to have them deliver our stuff and pick it out for us. We just went to the IKEA, wrote things down.
Well, that's a thing, huh? Yep. That's nice. Boy, when you have a truck, you just always schlep stuff yourself. Don't get a truck, because then you just schlep it.
Oh, yeah, you do.
The shipping or the moving of the stuff is flat rate, so you can get as much as you want, and it's $85.
Oh.
And if you don't want to go through the whole self-service thing and pick out all your stuff and then have them take it, it's another $20.
So how did the internet situation work out?
It got online last night at about 10 o'clock.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I...
connection's decent?
I put out all the shows I was behind on.
Yeah. People are like, where's the show is at? Like, Beard's moving. So how's the connection?
It's 250 down and 10 up.
Nice. Well, 250 down's pretty nice, though.
Mm-hmm. It's only $50 a month.
And then you're gonna probably have to set up a Plex server and a downloader. Like, all that stuff has to get done, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not urgent, but, like, you know.
It's still pieces of your new infrastructure.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
It's nice you got internet so quick. It took me like 2 weeks last time I moved. It was terrible.
Ooh.
Yeah, right.
It
like, felt
do?
Like it was the dark ages.
What did you do for 2 weeks? Seriously.
My mobile bill was outrageous.
What, your what?
My mobile bill was outrageous month.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, how many times do you go, oh yeah, I need to be online for that? Because just when the internet's out for a few hours, I mean, can't believe how many times I go, oh yeah, I can't look that up. Oh yeah, that's something I have to use the internet for. I mean, it's a billion times a day.
Thankfully, I have this my Linux-based router, and so it was pretty easy to plug my phone in and tether it.
Right? Nice.
But it still, it was like...
Sucking that data down.
Exactly.
You're going to see a large spike in data usage on the thing, Bill, Chris.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's probably... I mean, we seem to about every year, we have about 2 or 3 months where there's like a really heavy usage month.
Yeah.
That's fine. I think it still averages out.
Right? I think right now I'm just focused on making sure I have enough money to cover the bills for next month.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to use that as a baseline to know what to have in the future, and then I can spend after that.
Ooh. Yeah, you got to figure out your new normal.
Yep.
The lady's got work, though?
Yep.
Oh, that's good. So that'll help. That'll definitely help with the ongoing costs.
She actually had work before we had the place confirmed.
So what's next now?
Next, we are staying there for 8 months, and then we're moving again.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Have you checked your sanity?
I mean, you got just do it, you know, get it out of your system, because as you get more stuff, it's going to get to be more and more of a pain in the ass to move.
Well,
get to like one huge ass U-Haul, you know you've gone too far.
The second time will be easier because the other lady is actually going to drive her stuff across the country. So that will be a lot cheaper.
Nice, yeah.
And on top of that, we're going to have 3 incomes, so it'll be easier to find a place because it won't be such... So
you have a better budget.
Income restricted.
That's a good point.
But on the flip side, it might be harder because we need a place that allows a breed-restricted large dog.
Oh, yeah.
That is an added challenge.
That is.
Yep.
A large dog, huh?
Yep. It's a husky.
Oh, those are good dogs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Baird... I say congratulations to you and the lady. If the pictures I've seen, it looks like a really nice place. And it's in the Seattle area?
Oh, yeah. It's in North Seattle, Bitter Lake area.
That's what you guys were looking for, too. So, yeah. I mean, that's pretty great, too. Now you just got to hunker down and figure out what the new normal is and see if you can make it work.
Figure out the rest of your life.
Before I forget, I do have to talk some shit about Comcast.
Oh, yeah?
It turns out Comcast gigabit, it's not a gigabit up. It's a gigabit down. It's 35 megabits up, Chris.
What kind of technology are they using where they can only give you...
Old-fashioned Comcast cable.
It's DOCSIS 3 or whatever?
3.1.
I see.
It's not fiber.
I'd still take a gigabit, though. Does that have any kind of data cap?
Yes. It has a terabyte data cap. If you want uncapped...
That's a tease.
Fake gigabit.
Wow.
You have to pay an extra $50 a month.
For fake gigabit.
That's crazy.
At that point, it costs almost $200. You might as well pay an extra $100 and get the 2 gigabit that is symmetrical.
Oh, you know what we should do? Let's pause right here. Let's take a break, and then let's talk about net neutrality. DigitalOcean.com. Use the promo code Here's the Thing after you create your account and you get a $10 credit. Now, you could try warming your house with servers. Maybe get yourself a nice internet connection and a VPN and totally fool your ISP, and it's the next data center out of your house until you pop the circuit breaker, of course.
Or you move and then forget your server.
DigitalOcean.com. Go deploy infrastructure in seconds. They have SSDs for everything. 40 gigabit connections coming into the hypervisor, Linux for the host OS, then they got KVM for the virtualization environment, and a great dashboard that makes it easy for pros or beginners, and an API that makes tons of tools available just for you automatically. Like, you don't even have to write a line of code, unless you want to.
I was told, Chris, that there's a good line for this, API for days.
It's dashboard for days, and it was API four ways.
Everything.
Oh, API four ways? No? No? Okay.
Oh, baby.
Object storage is available, as well as block storage, load balancing as a service, tons of distributions. And when I say tons, I'm talking like Fedora, Debian, Ubuntu, CoreOS, CentOS, FreeBSD, which isn't Linux, but don't tell them that. DigitalOcean.com. Use our promo code Here's the Thing, and you can try out the $5 rig 2 months for free, or my favorite, 3 cents an hour. 3 cents an hour gets you 2 gigs of RAM, 2 CPUs, a 40 gigabyte SSD, and 3 terabytes of transfer. DigitalOcean.com. Data centers for days, dashboard for days, and an API for days. DigitalOcean.com. Promo code Here's the Thing. It's been a long time since we talked about net neutrality in this show, but the vote happened as we're recording this episode this week, and something shocking happened. I was watching it, hanging out with Turth in the Jupiter Broadcasting Telegram group, and a moment came that it took me a second to realize what had happened, and I went back and grabbed video, because I know you guys were driving, so I don't even know if you guys know this happened, because you were coming up to the studio.
I know nothing.
In the middle of the meeting for the FCC to repeal the net neutrality provisions, they had to stop everything because there was a bomb threat, and I got a moment of the audio here, and you can hear the panic in the FCC commissioner's voice a little bit.
On advice of security, we need to take a brief recess.
And then he jumps out of his seat.
I need everyone to leave everything that you have in place. Do not take anything out of here except for your body. Do not take any bags, books, or anything.
Then the police come in, and they tell everybody, don't take anything out of your bags, don't take anything out of your pockets, walk out. They go search everybody, and they bring in dogs. The dogs come in, they sniff the whole place.
Wow.
This goes on for like 20, 30 minutes, and then they bring people back in, and then in 20 minutes after that, they voted to repeal Title II protections and rolled back the Obama-era net neutrality protections right then, right after they got right back to business and got it done. And it crossed my mind that when you, as the representatives, when representatives of the people no longer listen to the people, they're going to be forced to resort to tactics like calling in bomb scares to try to disrupt something that they're against. They don't really have any other tools left.
Yep.
And it just sort of gets swept under the rug. I got a couple of quick people over Twitter were freaking out, but I got a couple of quick mentions.
Yeah,
on the
I hadn't
news
heard
networks.
About that at all.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, a bomb threat, and they had to evacuate the room, and he had to put a stop to the meeting, and he in the video looks panicked. They know deep down that the public really doesn't want this.
And they must, right? I mean, it's obvious.
I'm not even clear on the pros of them repealing, but I'm also not this believer in that it's the end of democracy. It's going to bring down the internet. First of all, the United States does not represent the totality of the internet. Turns out there's other countries connected to the internet. So it's a little hyperbole right there to begin with. And I know that some of our friends outside the states have noticed this.
I mean, you say that, but we are by far the largest internet consumers.
Yeah, no, I know. I acknowledge that reality, too. I believe that even if this is horrible and we do get a cut-up internet where things are put into tiers and Jupiter Broadcasting is smashed into the ground and YouTube and AOL or whatever you want to call them this week and all these other large old internet properties are entrenched for the remainder of time, even if that were to happen, it would seem like humanity has a way of swinging to the other extreme and then we have something new come along as a solution to this new problem. And I'll give you an example. Look what's happening in the news media. So when Clinton was in office, and this is what happened, he removed some rules that prevented major media companies from merging together. And so we went from about 25 major media companies in the United States to three. We went from about 25 to 6 to 3. And that's why they own the majority of the radio networks. That's why they generally have the same crap. It's all the same crap. People own the TV networks. It's all the same crap because of these rules that changed. And that has been a bad thing. The quality of news has obviously gone down. The public's trust in news has gone down. This has been a bad thing. However, at the same time, there has been an explosion of independent podcasts and journalism on YouTube and Twitter, all these other blogs, Twitters, all these other places. There has been this huge swing to independent journalism and self-reporting that probably wouldn't exist if we had a super healthy news media industry. If they were super vibrant and really on top of their jobs and doing a great job, there wouldn't be a demand for all these independent outlets like Unfilter. I think the same logic applies to these kinds of changes too. It's not a one-to-one analogy, but when the FCC chairman closes a door, usually entrepreneuring users open a window somewhere.
I mean, you say that, but the reason it worked in that other example is because they had a place to go. Where's the place to go when the internet isn't a place to go?
Maybe it's a new internet. Maybe it's something that's wireless. I don't know. It's beyond. you have to – things. The downside is, if my theory's true, is that things have to be really shitty for a while before you build up that desire to replace it.
Yeah.
So we have to go – we have to be the generation that goes through the muck to get to the other end where we have something truly great.
Yeah. I mean, I think you are right, especially, you know, longer term, big picture. There are these cycles and – we will, you know, society, culture will find a way to get around it. It just, it might suck for a while, and it's unfortunate that we are allowing ourselves to go through this period.
How do we know? How do we, what's going to be our, what is the test now to say, well, you see, if these net neutrality rules hadn't been repealed, this wouldn't be happening. Because you can't just, like, when Steve Jobs died, every time Apple farts, they're like, well, if Steve Jobs is there, that never would have happened.
Which is just,
That's just not...
It's just not true.
No. So how do we get something that's accurate to say, if these net neutrality... Because we need to be able to quantify this. Because we also need to be honest with ourselves if it goes swimmingly. Doubtful, but if it does go swimmingly, we need to be able to also be honest with ourselves and say, you know, we put up, like, the end of the world kind of fight about this, and then it turned out pretty great, and these companies have invested in the internet in ways we never expected. Wow, we really blew that one. Like, we have to be willing to do that. It's unlikely, but we have to be willing to do it. So how do we know when it's shit is bad because net neutrality was repealed and shit's great because net neutrality was repealed, or even nothing's changed? What is the metrics we now use to measure the success or failure?
I mean, don't we already have those metrics? And that's why this is such a large issue, because there were ISPs doing all kinds of, you know, deep packed inspection and
torrents,
and all that stuff before these regulations. Then we added these regulations. Somehow, all these ISPs still continue to make tons of money.
I just doubt that they're going to be so ham-fisted. Maybe they will, but I just doubt they're going to be so ham-fisted that they're going to make that exact mistake. Instead, I think they're going to be more clever, like T-Mobile, where it's going to be freemium stuff.
Yes.
And that's where they're going to run wild. Like the fact that T-Mobile just bought Level 3 TV, and now they're going to be they'll probably offer a great deal to T-Mobile customers to stream that video content.
Yeah, right, exactly. And to your point, like, you know, what metrics are we using? And I think also, like, what kind of time scale is this going to be, right? I doubt, like, in the next 2 years, we're going to see a ton of changes.
Right.
But what are the trends in, like, 10 years, and what kind of services are being offered in the next generation?
Yeah, I think it's going to be much more insidious. It would be slower behind the scenes. It might be new stuff.
Right, yeah.
Or deals, or let's just, like, speculate for a moment. Say Apple was going to launch a live television service to compete with Sling or PlayStation View or YouTube TV. And something tells me that they'd take maybe a bill or a mill, and they'd spread it around to make sure that the Apple TV streaming experience was the very best
possible.
In the past, the Apple TV used to be, I doubt it's true anymore, used to have a completely different streaming Netflix experience than other set-top boxes, because Apple reached an exclusive agreement with Netflix.
Oh, I remember
this. Rehost Netflix files on Akamai for Apple TV customers, which Akamai is a huge CDN, very fast. It's also how Apple distributes all the App Store downloads and all that shit, the music and all that. And so everything coming to the Apple TV devices was coming off Akamai. And so you could be sitting somewhere where you couldn't watch TV for shit. You couldn't watch Netflix for shit on one set-top box, go over to the Apple TV, and it works
great. It just works.
And that was a totally legal deal. And I think you would see more of that, where you wouldn't even really know. You wouldn't even know. You would just, for some reason, it always works great on this Apple box. But this Android one that you bought off from Best Buy, or this Kodi box that you built yourself, they don't get access to the Akamai stream. Akamai, or whatever, however you pronounce it.
Right.
And I think that's going to be the way this plays out more and more. And we may just be completely oblivious.
Yeah, subtle forces that push to these big providers that have those millions to spread around.
I don't know. I don't know what that means for the long term for companies like Jupiter Broadcasting, or like Chase's podcasting network, or even like Leo Laporte's. But it probably means good things for people that are on YouTube right now, other than the fact they're not making any ad money.
And maybe there, you know, as you're saying, maybe there will be some improvements. I'm sure the beard would love some investments in infrastructure so he could get real gigabit.
Yeah. I doubt it's going to be over. I just don't see them investing in wired infrastructure. What company is going to be crazy enough to invest in running copper or fiber anymore when they know that if they just wait another 10 years, they're going to have gigabit wireless?
So, I move out, Chris. In less than like 24 hours, I've been replaced.
Yeah, it's actually both your, it's Wes's fault and your fault. So yeah, it never would have happened. I ended up with extra time last Thursday. So I drove home, I was doing some reading, and I guess I should back up a bit. So Hadia and I had put our name on a list saying, you know, we're kind of interested in a dog. We're not in a big hurry, but, you know, if you guys end up with a lot of dogs and one needs seems like it would be a good fit with a family that has kids, let us know. And we got that call, and we went in, and we met a dog, and we fell in love with that dog, and then they gave it to another family. And then we called them up and said, why did you give this dog that we fell in love with to another family? And they said, well, I don't know, they just seem like a good fit, although you're a great fit too, so we'll just keep your name. And if anything comes up, we'll let you know. So it turns out there was some pretty big floods in Texas a little bit ago, yes. And a hurricane named Harvey came through and displaced a whole bunch of dogs. And I'd been kind of following this phenomenon, just unrelated to the fact that I was even looking for a dog, but just because I've been following Hurricane Harvey mm-hmm. since it happened. And I saw that a lot of dogs had been in the Seattle area. I thought, huh, that's weird. A lot of dogs from Texas. And I thought, you know, I'd love to have a dog from Texas. I love Texas. I love going down to Texas. We went to Austin this year. Wouldn't it be great if I wound up with a dog from Texas?
A little piece of Texas.
Take him back there sometime.
So Thursday, my phone rings. Oh, God damn it. Why is my phone ringing, I think, to myself? And I thought, oh, maybe it's Wes. So I answer the phone, and it's the dog people. And they say, hi there, Mr. Fisher. We have this dog named Levi in here, and he's a terrier mix. He's about 12, 13 pounds. He's great with kids. And we'd like to know if you'd like to come meet him. I'm like, well, I was just sitting there frying myself some coconut prawns, as I do.
Naturally.
And I'm like, well, let me finish frying up these coconut prawns here in my RV, which is what I do on a Thursday when I go home randomly.
You forgot, Chris, to mention the most important part. They don't know how old he is. He is from temporal space anomaly.
I think he's somewhere between a year and 3 to 6 months old. But that's a guess. You know, they look at the rings on the teeth like a tree or something. And so I go in there, and I knew immediately. I could tell immediately he was adorable. And I could also tell he was smart instantly, which is I grew up around dogs. I've had really dumb dogs. I've had really smart dogs. And you can always tell the smart dog when you go up to a window and the dog looks at you in the window and then runs to the door because he knows you got to come through the door to let you know. Like, oh, that's the smart one in the room. And so I go in there, and I got to spend a little time with him, and he was just the snuggliest puppy. He was so happy to just be with somebody and not be around these other big dogs that are totally dominating the room. And he had a ton of personality. I took him out for a walk, and he just had a ton of personality. And so I was like, wow, this is a pretty great dog. I'm like, yeah, I think I'd like to adopt this dog. I'm like, okay, well, we'll need to meet your fiancé first. What?
Oh.
Yeah, we can't let you adopt the dog without, you know, your fiancé seeing if the dog's a good fit. I'm like, okay.
So she can't wear her, like, I hate dogs shirt. She's right. Got to be on her best behavior.
They got to check us out.
Yeah.
So I send a message to Hadid. I'm like, babe, I know that your employees are out today and you're the only one working. Do you think you could call one of them in and come down to see this dog? And she gracefully said, let me see what I can do. And she moved an appointment and canceled an appointment and then had an employee drive in. And she was able to get out just in time for her to get down before they closed to meet Levi. And we signed the paperwork, and then she had to take off. And then just like the first time I became a father, all of a sudden, like when you go to the hospital or a birth center and you have a baby, there is a moment where you are walking out the door now with something that you did not walk in the door with.
Right.
And it is a big something
things
that has
changed.
A lot of things that it needs that you've got to figure out how to get in your car, and now you're going to figure out how to drive with this thing, and all of this new stuff has just happened. And that's where I found myself after she left. And I'm like standing there with this dog and a couple of the essentials that I've bought for that evening, like dog food, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going home now. And it's like 7-8 o'clock at night. So I go home and
I'm a dog owner now.
I have no idea. And like they think he's potty trained because he hasn't gone potty in the kennel. So they think he's potty trained, but they don't know
what you're in for.
And they've warned me a million times, he's a bolter. He's a bolter. You open the door, he goes. Well, that's true only if he's really been pent up in captivity. Turns out he's not really so much. He is to a degree if there's something to really go see, but yeah. Sometimes I actually get – it's a pain in the butt to get his ass outside. So I bring him home, and I'm just sort of like, you know, just getting him used to the space. And he almost instantly – knew as soon as we got to the junkyard and I let him out of the truck, he just knew. It was like he started running around and go woof, woof, little
that's
woof.
That's so cute.
Like, oh, good, good, good. And that, we hadn't heard him bark yet. I was like, oh, good, okay. So that's what he sounds like when he barks. And then another couple of days go by and he hadn't barked at all. It's really only when you guys, so like once he realized, oh, these are my people. This is my little dog clan. then I'm protecting those people. Then all of a sudden he started barking. So it was like 3 or 4 days into having him. It
took him figuring out this was the new world he was in.
All of a sudden he started to become a little more protective when somebody's crossing the street or he hears somebody knock at the door or come in the studio. But pretty fun first day when I brought him to the studio because the studio wasn't prepared for dog.
No.
And, of course, you, just like you got to prepare for a kid, you kind of, you know, if you got garbage that is overflowing, you got to put that away. And I had a thing of peanuts out in the shell, salted shelled peanuts.
Yeah.
And it didn't even cross my mind that this was going to be a thing that this dog would be into. But I watched him stand up on his back feet and look over on my desk and reach his mouth into my tray where I had the peanuts, grab one peanut shell, go back down, jump up on the bed. He holds the peanut shell with his two front paws.
Oh, my gosh. That's adorable.
And he holds it vertically. And then he chomps off the top of the peanut shell and then proceeds to get the peanuts out and discards the rest of it.
That's amazing.
I watch that. I'm like, that dog has to have done that before. There is no way that is the first time. That dog deshells a nut better than I do.
See, if you could just train him so that he gives you the nuts.
Right. Yeah. I am working on the training. You know, working on like the leave it and walk it and all that stuff. But he does seem to be potty trained.
Excellent.
The first day I brought him in to the studio is the only time he's had an accident. He pooped in the studio, in the actual studio. And it happened so fast. Like, I mean, I'm upstairs.
I've done that too, Chris. It's sometimes you just can't help it.
I know. He felt so bad too. Because, you know, he's walking and he's got his tail between his leg. And then he went and hid under the bed for a little bit. So he knew it was the wrong thing to do, but he didn't know. We were here for like 20 minutes and I was just working on something upstairs and I was going to take him outside. And in that time, you know, just all the excitement of driving, he comes into this studio. So way out of my, because I'm way upstairs,
right,
way out of my purview, comes into the actual studio.
Oh, right here,
actual
where
studio,
we are.
Finds a glove on the floor, poops exactly in the center of that glove. The glove was just like on the floor with its hand out, poops in the center of the hand of the glove. And then I come downstairs and like,
I mean, at least it made it easy for you to get rid of it.
It was. Like, I just picked the glove up. I'm like, well, I'm putting this outside so he knows where this goes.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any carpet cleanup I had to do. And that's the only accident he's had in now the 7 days.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had him for 7 days now.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's just the right size, so we let him sleep on the bed with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually starts with he's at the foot of the bed. And then as the night progresses, he works his way along my back, sort of reverse spooning me back to back. And he stretches out, so he's really long. And one of the other things he'll do is if he has to jump down and then get back up, he wants to get right back in that position. So he jumps up on the bed, he sits on his butt, and then he pushes off and lands backwards
on
his back.
That's adorable! Wow.
And then he's right back to sleep. and then about halfway through the night or so, after I've been moving around too much, he gives up and then goes back down to the foot of the bed. It's pretty funny, like, watching him learn us. When are we getting ready to go? When is it time to get out of bed versus
so
we're
signals.
Just going to the bathroom? Or when is it dinner time? When is it the right time to get a treat? Like, all these little things that he's learning about us. And so last night, this will be my last Levi story for the week. And then maybe more like next week, but I doubt it. So last night was that perfect night where we had come to a common language, the dog and I. I get home before Hadia. And I just gotten done doing Unfilter, so I'm exhausted.
And you're like, bring me bacon.
So, no, I get all crouched on the couch, and I crash on the couch. I'm laid out, you know, fully vertical, head propped up, TV on, YouTube app loading, ready to veg out for the 30 minutes I have before Hadia comes home and we're going to make dinner. And I'm like, come on, Levi, come sit with me. You know, come on. And he won't come. I'm like, yeah, he's got you twice, whatever. And I'm laying there, and I'm watching, and the next thing I know, I hear this. Like, what the hell was that? What was that? And I'm like, did somebody just hit my RV? Like, that was loud, right?
Yeah.
And I look back over there, and Levi's looking at me, and I realize what I just heard is him leaping up against the door, parkouring off the door, and then back onto the ground. And it was this
time
loud
to come in.
Thud.
Yeah. Wow.
He wanted out. He wanted out to go potty.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, you know what? I'll take it. I'll take it, because that's letting me know. But it was like this loud thud, but because there's these steps to go up the RV. So there's this gap he had to jump. And he can hit it and then bounce off like somebody in a YouTube video.
The only way to be cooler is if he did a backflip.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's pretty funny. It was this thump, and I'm like, oh, he's got to let me know he's got to go take a dump. He's letting me know. I'm like, good boy. So we're starting to develop a common human dog
Yeah, right. It's funny. You develop a way to communicate despite not really being able to communicate.
Yep. He's been good. We got him as he's a small dog. He's like 13 pounds, and it's freezing outside, but we still want to take him for a walk. So we try to give him maybe one or two walks a day. So we got him in this little fleece sweater, like this little thin fleece sweater. It's amazing the heat that traps that thing. It really works, and he loves it. I've never had a dog that loves it. He loves being dressed.
That's awesome.
It's weird. So it's just this green. It's not like foo-foo or anything like that. He's a man's dog. He really is. Like, he looks like a dog. He doesn't look like a little foo-foo dog. No offense. But, you know.
No, he does look like a dog.
The thing is, if I can't respect my dog, then I can't be a good dog father.
Right.
I gotta respect my dog's intelligence.
You gotta be all in.
Yeah, I gotta be all in. So that was why he was the perfect dog for us. So when we put the sweater on him and he was like down with it, I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah, match made in heaven.
This is great. And then at night, you know, we take it off and he runs around the house and
it's exciting.
It. Mm-hmm. It's good times.
Well, Chris, you have official approval. He is an acceptable beard substitute.
Yeah. It's been lonely without your beard. I had to have somebody. Otherwise, I'm just talking to myself, and then I'm crazy. So now I'm just talking to the dog, and I'm not crazy.
You're not crazy at all.
Yeah. Or in podcasting.
You have multiple outlets now. Has there been anything that's like really surprised you or been different this time around in dog ownership?
More so than my other dogs. He's a hider. He's a burrower. So his first, and I think maybe it's because he came up from Texas. He's probably been around a lot of other large animals that are taking his stuff. And so he hides. If he gets something he really likes, his first instinct is to go hide it and then have nothing to do. And so I'm like, here, Levi, I'm going to give you this perfectly timed chew toy so that way you're distracted while I record this hour and a half podcast. And his first thought is, I'm going to go hide this in the backyard, or I'm going to go hide this.
Useful.
When I have the back door closed, he will find piles of cables, or he will make piles of cables. So he formed a pile of cables upstairs in my office and then hid his toy, his chew toy, underneath that. And so then what he does is when he gets bored, he walks on patrols around the studio to all of his former hiding places since the first day he's been here.
That's amazing.
He's
got
to check in on all of them and
protect his valuables.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, though. I'm like, no, dog, just chew on it. Just chew. I'm not going to take it from you. I promise. But he's totally worried that the bigger dogs are going to take his chew toy.
I don't know, Chris. I've seen you come in here and patrol the studio to make sure all your stuff is in position.
Stealing people's Five Guys.
All right. Hashtag Ask Air. Would you download a car? Super simple. Would you download a car? If you could download a car and 3D print it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You'd feel safe? Yeah. How long would you wait? How many on the road would there have to be before you'd do one of those?
Well, I wouldn't download a car because I don't drive. I would download a self-driving car.
I feel like I would only take a couple dozen, maybe 1,000 across the entire world that are being driven around. Because think about this. If it's a 3D printed car, in theory, you could be in Lithuania and download it. You don't have to be in the West. So you're going to have people trying this all over the world.
You just got to get a big enough 3D printer.
You know what would really happen, though, is people would crash and they'd blow up. And then there would be horrible stories about how this amateur 3D printed car blows up, just like there have been about Teslas. But I'd still do it. Okay, hashtag Ask Air. Do you welcome the advent of timeshare sex bots? I think for this question, we'll assume they're clean.
No, that's still weird.
You think so? Like, people go to whorehouses. What's the difference between, I mean, in some ways, a sex robot would be cleaner, safer.
I find those weird, too.
Well, you've never been, obviously. No.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm not sure I'm personally interested in, but it
really
seems
you guys
like,
are a couple of prudes. But if people are going to whores.
I'm fine with other people doing it.
Yeah,
it's not for me.
Like, it seems like one of those things where I would never, I may not need it or desire it. I have no objections. Like, I'm not interested in the morality angle of it. It seems like if it's something that can be done in a fair society, just going to happen.
Listen, Chris, didn't you hear last week I printed my own sex bot?
Here's what I want to know, though. Is it cheating if it's a sex bot? Or is it just masturbation if it's a sex bot? Because there's no other human being that you're having an emotional affair with.
I mean, there's some couples that if you masturbate, they get angry, too, though.
So it would depend. It does depend on like what you've agreed to in the relationships you're in, and probably how intelligent or like are you forming a weird bond with your sex bot? And you don't want to take me out
with
anymore.
Fleshlights? See, it's a fleshlight.
I mean, there's people that marry roller coasters, Chris.
Yeah, I think I'd be up for it as long as Hadia was okay with it. I'd give it a shot because I'm assuming they got like modular vaginas and stuff that they're swapping out and cleaning.
Well, and she could have one too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know. I would assume it'd be a clean modular dick. I don't know.
I feel like I don't feel like it could ever be clean enough for something that's public use.
What if you brought?
I'm already wary of using public toilets, Chris.
Okay. Hashtag Ask Air. How much would you pay for a dog or cat that retained its puppy or kitten temperament, size, and appearance its whole life? The forever puppy. How much would you pay for a forever puppy?
Well, there's a reason I want a husky corgi mix.
Yeah? Is it a forever puppy?
Yeah, it's a tiny little husky forever.
Cute. That's adorable. I'm not big on it, to be honest. I you know, one of the things I like about Levi is he's about 6 months out-ish.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to have a dog that doesn't chew up everything. You know, I mean, I that's one of the things when I got, I was like, you know, that's kind of nice not to have to do like a whole 2 or 3 year puppydom and just sort of skip the first year and a half. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, like puppies are fun and adorable, but the dog part is why I'm in this.
I guess I want it more for the like the physical attributes and less the temperament.
Well, and kittens are adorable.
True, yeah.
Kittens.
I'm kind of over kittens.
Yeah,
we have two cats, and it's been 48 hours, and I'm kind of over kittens.
Yeah, there is that when you're moving in cats and putting them in new places.
I was doing the shows last night. My back kept getting attacked. Every time I went to use the mouse, my fingers got bit.
Oh man, welcome! That's great. That's so awesome. That's so good. I love it.
It's a cute cat, but Jesus,
that is pretty good. Okay, hashtag Ask Air. At what point will you guys be starting a group sex user air spinoff show for Jupiter Broadcasting?
I mean, that's been the plan since you launched Jupiter Broadcasting.
It's the long-term plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a 15-year plan.
Part of the reason I moved out of the studio is so we can turn it into a porn studio.
Brown chicken, brown cow. All right, you asked in a recent user air if Jupiter Broadcasting was a 3-man business or a 10-man business. What's the vision for Jupiter Broadcasting for the next 5 years? Hashtag Ask Air. Now, this is one of those tough ones because I've always been horrible at answering this question, even when I was an employee and my manager said, what do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah.
I can't even things change so much in a single year.
What do you see yourself in 5 hours, Chris?
Right. Like, if you had asked me this 5 years ago, I probably wouldn't have said a lot of things. I would never have thought I'd be living in an RV, driving all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, that's never a thing I'm going to do. That's maybe when I'm 60.
An example, when we came up with the idea for Tech Talk Today, that was a 24-hour process.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes things go really fast. Sometimes things are slow. Like, I got a couple of shows on the back burner that I'm slowly assembling. Mm-hmm. So there are some things. So we'll see. Next 5 years? Well, I'll say this. I feel like the net neutrality aside, I feel like the market is good for podcasts. Podcasts in general are being downloaded and listened to more than they ever have, and they're easier to download and listen to, and more cars make it easier to listen to stuff on your phone while you're driving.
You no longer have to be like super technically savvy to go find and listen to and consume podcasts.
And Google has podcasts built in now in the Play Podcast app. Apple has a podcast app that seems to be fairly popular.
People just like understand what they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like even the big outlets have so-called podcasts.
I think that helped to a degree. I think like the NPR shows, obviously Serial and things like that, they were sort of the content that pushed people into podcasting. Just like Netflix had content that moved people over to Netflix, podcasts got podcasts that move people that weren't there before. And I think it really made a difference. So I think the next 5 years is good for podcasting. I don't know how good it is for video production, because the bar is constantly getting higher, depending on what you want to do. Now, a lot of people disagree with me on this, but this is my personal opinion, is that the bar is constantly being moved higher, and if you're not slowly but steadily improving your video game, adding 4K, multi-camera setups, good lighting, good audio, responding to the demands of a particular kind of audience on YouTube, if you're not doing those things constantly, then it is a unbelievable investment with very little return. And I don't know how strong the video podcast market is. You see people doing it. They just sit in front of their camera, like Bogey 250, I can't remember, 256, or PewDiePie. You know, they'll sit in front of their camera and they'll do it. And that's one form of a kind of like a podcast. But I just really don't know if the hour and a half long...
Yeah, they're all doing short-form content.
Yeah, the hour-and-a-half-long style show is going to work super well in video form.
I think it does work well, but only live.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that get very successfully on Twitch.
I agree. I agree it's different live for some reason, and I don't even know if I can fully put words to why I can sit there and stare at something live if it's live.
You know, like it makes you interpret it differently when you're watching. You feel you feel connected, and maybe
you have interaction.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of market dynamics at play for the way that videos are going to get monetized that are different than the way that podcasts get monetized. And I think that's going to make people upset. But in 5 years, I think Jupiter Broadcasting will have figured this out. Because I don't know which way, you know, things are going to swing for us, but we're going to try to make the best product possible. And we'll hopefully get that all worked out over the next few years, hopefully sooner than that. I'm not a big fan of growing to like a 10-man business. I'm always a big fan of just keeping it as tight as we can, because you sort of have less fundamental flexibility the more tied down you are. And it's pretty important on the internet to remain flexible, because shit can change in a moment's notice. And the more tied down you are, the more committed you are, the less flexible and the less options you have. So that's, you know, that's something.
And in some ways, if you count all the hosts, we are already a 10-man business.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose so. So there you go. I guess that's my – is that an answer? I know that's not great. I'm sorry, but I'm not good at the five-year thing. I've never have, because I, every year of my adult life, have been shocked at how much changes at the end of the year. So a lot of times, you know, at the beginning of the year, people will set like a New Year's resolution. I'd never do those. Fuck New Year's. I mean, if I want to do it, I'm going to do it right now. If I want to lose weight, I'm going to start right the fuck now. I'm not going to wait till the new year. But one thing I have been doing for years now is I take a mental moment and I go, what changed from this moment last year? And I run through like the highlights in my personal life.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And every single time I've done that for the last 3 or 4 years, I'm like, holy shit. I never saw that coming. Never would have. When I was standing at this point a year ago, I never would have predicted that ever. And it can be all kinds of crazy personal life stuff, or, you know, a different vehicle or a new RV. Like, all of these things that you just don't really see coming, that the momentum of life and the grooves that you have found yourself in bring you to. And so 5 years, fuck, I could be dead in 5 years. I could be poor. I could be rich. Bitcoin could go bust.
You'll probably be living in Mexico in your RV, retired by the beach.
God, I hope so.
Living off Bitcoin money.